The Fan on Demand. This is the Showdown. With Showdown Joe on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Welcome to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. For the next hour, we're going to talk about mixed martial arts, UFC, Strikeforce, potentially Dream, especially Bellator, and everything in between on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. Once again, my co-host in studio is Tyler Mason. And Tyler, what an incredible week it's been since the news was announced last Saturday. Out of nowhere, the Ultimate Fighting Championship, or shall I say Zuffa, or a subsidiary of Zuffa named Forza, which means sort of go or you know, compete in Italian, purchases their number one competition in Strikeforce MMA. Shocking news, to say the least. We will discuss that and much, much more on today's radio show. We'll take a look at UFC 128 going down this Saturday night at the Prudential Center with Mauricio Shogun, who will defending his light heavyweight championship title for the first time against top contender, number one prospect in the sport, Johnny Bones Jones. We'll look back at Bellator 36 and look forward to Bellator 37, perhaps a little bit later on in the show. Now, the big news, obviously, it's been a gong show since it was announced on Saturday. I think it was Josh Gross from ESPN that actually broke the news, but then Ariel Helwani from AOL or MMAfighting.com was able to sit Dana White down to talk about something that just came out of left field, the Ultimate Fighting Championship purchasing Strikeforce. I mean, it's a complete strange scenario at the time when I first heard the news, because I didn't see this coming from a mile away, but it opens up a whole variety of possibilities. So Tyler, let me ask you this before we start breaking down a variety of elements from this acquisition. What went through your mind when you first heard the news?
Well, I was completely surprised. I mean, you saw me when I came in. I had no idea, because I have been sleeping the entire day because I work.
Once again, Tyler proving again that he's lazy. Go ahead.
I work so many late nights. So I woke up and I came straight to work, and I was, you know, surprised that you were there, because you don't usually come in on a Saturday. And it was surprising. I mean, it really did come out of left field. Like, no one really saw this coming. And apparently it's been, you know, in negotiations for quite a time now. So it was a really good kept secret that I didn't see it coming at all.
Now, so the real question is, what does this mean? And during the interview with Ariel Helwani, the main theme from the interview was Dana White consistently articulating business as usual. And then there was a conference call on Monday, which included Dana White, Lorenzo Fertitta, which is the CEO of Zuffa and the Ultimate Fighting Championship, majority owner as well, and of course, Strikeforce CEO and president Scott Coker. The gist of that conference call was more or less, again, business as usual. Everything will continue to run the same, two separate entities. The Grand Prix will continue to go on. There won't be any super fights anytime soon, but we'll discuss that momentarily. But the one good thing is, the moving forward now with Strikeforce events, they will adopt the unified rules of mixed martial arts, which is Latin for elbows will now be allowed on the ground. You'll be seeing more elbows in Strikeforce as opposed to never seeing elbows in Strikeforce. So you get all this type of information. The real question is, what does this mean for Strikeforce and the long-term perspective of the organization? And I've got two simple theories. Strikeforce will be a feeder league eventually. The main thing here is a television deal that's preventing any of these theories from coming true just yet. The television deal that Strikeforce has, depends on who you listen to, goes till either 2013 or as late as 2014. But once that television deal expires, I believe this is what will happen with Strikeforce and the UFC. Strikeforce will be a feeder league where up-and-coming fighters can meet those UFC fighters that have recently been cut. Or B, Strikeforce, like we've seen with Pride, the WFA, the WEC, and sort of indirectly with Affliction MMA, will merge with the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Your thoughts?
Well, I don't think the merger is going to happen as soon as everyone thinks. I mean, obviously the TV deal is there and they have to honor that. And, you know, Josh Gross has been, I guess, following this story really in-depthly. And from what I've gathered is, it seems like the TV deal ends somewhere in 2012. And
Lorenzo Fertitta saying 2014 in the conference call on Monday.
Okay, so I mean, I guess it's going to be quite a while. But I don't think the merger will happen like immediately after. I think the UFC was looking at Strikeforce because they are a strong brand, and in a certain area they have, you know, they have a strong base in Southern California and also in Texas. So I mean, I think that kind of Southwest area, I mean, they're two of the most populous states In the United States. And I think the UFC was looking at that. I mean, UFC has their base in Las Vegas, and they're kind of moving into the Northeast. So I think that kind of fighter recognition in that Southwest area, I think they were really interested in that. And also with the move to Asia, Strikeforce employed a lot of fighters that that have fought in, you know, Japan and in Asian markets, and they have a lot of name credibility over there. So I think that's where the UFC is thinking of using the Strikeforce name. And then eventually, yes, I think they will merge into the UFC. But I think that the big divisions that are going to see changes are the heavyweight division, the middleweight division, and the lightweight division. Because I think that's where the UFC doesn't have a complete monopoly. And I think that's where Strikeforce had their kind of base in those three divisions.
Yes. So now with the UFC acquiring the Strikeforce talent, about 140 fighters will be added to their existing roster. What we're going to see now, basically as it stands today, the UFC, if you look at all the rankings minus the 125-pounders and the women's division, the UFC has over 90% of the top 10 fighters, if not the top 25 fighters in every single weight class. So that just goes on to say, you know, where do you want to start? You want to start in the heavyweight division? Let's talk about Alistair Overeem, the Strikeforce heavyweight champion. Should this guy emerge victorious in the upcoming heavyweight Grand Prix, everyone wants to see Alistair Overeem take on the likes of Cain Velasquez or the Brock Lesnar or the Junior Dos Santos. Sets up fights like that. And then, of course, there's the welterweight division with Nick Diaz as the Strikeforce 170-pound champ. Forever he's been calling out George St. Pierre. That's a potential fight that could be happening down the road. And like you mentioned, the lightweight division. Gilbert Melendez has been top three, top five in pretty much every reputable MMA website's rankings for the longest time. This kid is salivating. I mean, El Nino made it clear on Twitter, he's salivating at the fact that he's a Zuffa employee and gets a chance to take on Frankie Edgar or whomever the UFC lightweight champion will be. Those are three situations right there. You mentioned the middleweight class. And who do you see in that middleweight class? Obviously, Jacare?
Yeah, Jacare is obviously the big whale in the middleweight class. There's also Tim Kennedy. You know, even strikers like Manhoef is they're exciting, right? So I mean, there's a lot of possibilities with that division as well. And the big critique on the middleweight division is it's always been the weakest of all divisions. Not because one company has more. It just seems like that weight division, people either move up or they move down in weight. And you can see it with someone like Anderson Silva. He's had the ability to fight at 170 and also as heavy as 205. So the middleweight has always been kind of a mishmash of guys who can't make 205 or can't make 170. And people haven't really given it the respect that maybe it deserves. And now, you know, when you have top-tier fighters from two organizations merging, you're going to see a lot better caliber fights in that middleweight division.
So overall, what is your short-term, mid-term, long-term forecast for Strikeforce in the UFC?
Well, I like how you mentioned Overeem before. I think what's interesting about Overeem is he came out and said before the Grand Prix even started that his contract is up at the end of this tournament. So, I mean, the fact that Fedor lost and is out of the tournament, I think Zuffa saw an opportunity to say, you know what, now we can grab the winner, you know, who we think probably is going to be Overeem. We can grab the possible winner of this championship, move him into the UFC, and then not worry about that debate of who the best heavyweight in the world is anymore, and finally put it to rest. And I think that's important. I think they really want to solidify that, you know, the top echelon guys are in the UFC. And you know what? I think they're also interested in some of the prospects that are being built up on the Challenger Series. I mean, Ovince St. Pro is a 205 prospect, even Feijão, and, you know, to a lesser extent, Henderson they can bring back in, but I think they're looking more at the younger fighters. Even a Tyrone Woodley in the welterweight division. He's a young wrestler, good stand-up. I mean, they're looking for the future stars, and I think Strikeforce had a better feeder league to present their fighters than the UFC doesn't really have one at all. They just kind of grab from all over the place. So I think that's part of this process that they went into their minds before they bought the company.
One of the questions or one of the names that kept coming up was Fedor Emelianenko, and Fedor does not have a deal with Strikeforce. He has a deal with the television partner. I maintain that, deal or not, I don't think we will ever see Fedor compete under the Zuffa banner or inside the octagon for the UFC. What say you?
I think it could happen, but it's probably not likely because Fedor's contract, his whole situation is mixed up in the M1. M1 management, and M1 wants to co-promote with whoever they're working with. You know, Strikeforce didn't have a problem with it. UFC obviously has a problem with it.
No shot.
And Dana White even said he's not going to he's not going to co-promote with Strikeforce, whom he like whom Zuffa owns. I mean, it's under the same banner. So if you won't even co-promote with companies that they own themselves, don't expect M1 to co-promote with the UFC. So unless Fedor's contract ends with M1 and he decides to, you know, sign a one or two or three fight deal with the UFC separate, I don't think we'll see it. But I'm never going to say never, because I never thought we'd see Krokop in the UFC, and he showed up, and he's
been around. Never.
So yeah, I won't say never, because you never say never, but it's unlikely.
I think it's unlikely. You know what? I should never say never, but yeah, it's unlikely. Now, you mentioned Dan Henderson, and I'll bring up not only Dan Henderson, but Josh Barnett, Paul Daly. As we saw when the news was announced, Dan Henderson took to his Twitter as Josh Barnett spoke with SureDog.com and mentioned, you know, both these guys have sort of turned their positioning around, whereas, you know, Dan Henderson, not to paraphrase it, but he basically said, you know, that there was never really many issues with the UFC, just that sometimes when Dana White doesn't get his way, he's pretty brash. And he went to Strikeforce because Strikeforce was able to offer him more money. Henderson has one more fight left in his contract, which means whoever he faces next to defend the title for the first time will potentially be his last fight. Dan Henderson, and then there's Josh Barnett, who's long been an enemy of UFC president Dana White. He's changed his tune, saying he now respects Dana White, likes how he does business, how he's metal, how he's hardcore, and understands how, just like Josh Barnett, destroys the competition. But now that if it means that he has to work that much harder to compete for the UFC, he's willing to do it. Those are two guys now that have changed their tune, except for Paul Daly, who's a third guy, and Paul Daly has already made it clear he may not even fight Nick Diaz in the second week of April, because he doesn't want to put any extra money in Dana White and Zuffa's pocket. He'd be more than happy to continue competing for the likes of Bama in his home country of England, or perhaps the Bellators or MFCs here in North America. What say you of Henderson, Barnett, and Daly?
I don't think we'll ever see Josh Barnett fight in the UFC unless he gets licensed by California. I think Dana White is very aware of the fact that he has to honor all of these commissions, and if you can't fight in one commission, you should have no right to fight under another. So I think he's very aware of that, and I think Barnett, that should be his first priority, is being licensed by California, because I don't think the UFC is going to go against California. I think that'd be the wrong move. I will say for sure we're never going to see Frank Shamrock commentating in the UFC. And Paul Daly, because of his attitude, I don't think we'll see him in there. I think if he changes his attitude, there's a possibility. We've seen with Carl Parisian, Dana White said Carl will never fight in the UFC. He came back, fought in the UFC. I think that's kind of the same situation with Daly. I mean, Dana White's been a little bit more public with Paul Daly saying he'll never fight in the UFC, but I think there's still a possibility there, because they just like winners. And look at Michael Vick. I mean, Michael Vick had dogs fighting. He went to jail and everyone was condemning him.
Yep.
Served his time. But it wasn't until he started winning that people were like, you know what? We forgive Michael Vick. I mean,
Dana forgave him the minute he came out of jail. I'll give credit to Dana. He said, listen, the guy served his time. The guy committed a crime. He was sentenced. He served his time. Now it's time for a new start. And he said he hopes that he makes billions of dollars and now that he's back in the NFL.
And when you look at the Paul Daly situation, I think it's more an idea of public perception. And a lot of the public follow what Dana White says. And I think the public perception of Paul Daly might change, and they'll more want him to fight in the UFC the more fights he wins. And I think that is going to be the big issue going forward. I mean, if he changes attitude and he keeps winning, I mean, it's only inevitable he would be back in the UFC.
And real quick, Dan Henderson. You didn't mention anything about Dan Henderson. You think he'll be back under the UFC banner in the Octagon?
I think Dan Henderson will be back in the UFC. I mean, I don't think his conflict with Dana White was too big. I mean, they were joking with each other at the MMA Awards right after the contract was signed. You might even throw him into the whole shuffle of possible contenders for Michael Bisping down the line. I mean, Rich Franklin's coming out and saying he wants to fight Michael Bisping. We were talking about Belfort and Sonnen before. I mean, I think everybody wants a shot at this guy, and I'm sure Henderson wouldn't mind another one, but I don't think there's too much bad blood between him and Dana White.
We will continue to talk about the UFC's acquisition of Strikeforce coming up after the break, perhaps discuss a bit of a fighters union and what this all means and what it all is going to entail over the next, let's say, 18 months, 2 years, 3 years, or perhaps all the way to 2014. There's so much more to talk about, and of course, we will look at UFC 128 going down this Saturday night. Shogun Hua defending his title against John Bones Jones. That and much more right here on the Showdown on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
This is the Showdown. Showdown with Showdown Joe on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Welcome back to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. Once again, my co-host in studio, Tyler Mason, and I are discussing the UFC's acquisition of Strikeforce and what it means for the sport of mixed martial arts, what is going to happen short-term, mid-term, and long-term. What does it mean for the fighters currently contracted under Strikeforce? Are we getting super fights? If you missed it in the last segment, unfortunately for you, you have to try and find the podcast, which will be online after the show. You had a couple of different thoughts while we were off air, especially concerning Dana White and how Dana White is sort of mimicking Vince McMahon.
Well, he said in the past that Vince McMahon is one of the guys he looks up to and kind of follows the same business plan. And, you know, everyone's been comparing this to how other leagues have merged. I think it's a little bit different because the UFC had such a market share, whereas these other leagues were actually competing with, you know, I guess lesser leagues, you know, like with the NBA and the ABA and the NFL and the AFL. I mean, they had quite a bit of market. They were more competitors, where the UFC was pretty far and away the number one organization. But this is very similar to what happened when Vince McMahon took over the WWF at the time from his father. He went around and he basically bought up all the local promotions and made a real North American, real national professional wrestling league, right? So it's exactly what Dana White's done. He's bought out the WFA, he's bought out the WEC, and now Strikeforce and Pride. I mean, Pride was huge because at the time
it was bigger than the UFC.
So that was the massive merger. But now he's buying up all these smaller competitors. And I think this is the exact same model that WWF used. His pay-per-view model is extremely similar. And, you know, even his television deal is starting, his television deals are starting to mimic even the WWE now. So I think if we want to look to see what happens, I think that's kind of the model that he's going with. And I know you wanted to talk about unions, and you don't see it in professional wrestling, but you do see it in professional sports. So I think that's where the big issue going forward is going to be.
Yeah, I think the real issue regarding unions is team sport versus, you know, a one person sport. Your own brand, your own entity. In essence, you're your own team. I think it would be difficult for a fighters union, and they've been talking about it for a long time. And the issue is, in order to get a fighters union up and running, you need the big guys. You need the George St. Pierre's, the Brock Lesnar's, and the Randy Couture's, and guys of that nature. If they don't jump on board, which means they don't want to give up a portion of their salary to put into the union, because it's difficult. I mean, do you want to give a portion? If you're in their position, do you want to give a portion of your purse and your bonus and your salary to a union that might go to a fighter that may never make it to the upper echelon or even within the UFC? So it's one of the guys that may never make it anywhere. Right, so it's difficult to say if a fighters union will ever occur, but what we might see is something similar to what boxing has in the Muhammad Ali Act, where the government steps in and creates specific laws that says a promoter can't do this or promoter can't do that. I think that's where perhaps the fighters need to look at if that's what they want to do, because it's going to be far more difficult now to negotiate being a fighter that's going to be competing under the Zuffa banner when there's no one else you can go to. Your options are either Bellator or the MFC or Bama or Titan FC, those organizations that don't have near the amount of money that the UFC has. So, and don't get me wrong, the UFC pays their fighters very well. What you see, you know, released by the commissions is hardly, you know, what they actually get paid, you know, in the dressing room. I know this firsthand. So it's one of those things. But can they get more? Of course they can get more. But if the UFC is the big brand, that's what you're going to see in the future.
And I think a big problem is kind of the perception of this. I mean, unions in the United States has a very different public persona than they do in Canada. I mean,
oh, yeah.
In Canada, our kind of the way we're brought up, we're more about spreading the wealth around and helping out our neighbors. And we all take care of each other because we kind of know that we could end up in the same situation down the line. Where in the U.S., it's a lot more individual and, I guess, libertarian. I think fighters like you've seen with the politics of Lindland or Chael Sonnen, I mean, those guys are more going to be in the camp of, you know, I'm going to take care of myself. You know, so I think that's where we're going to have the problem. The right union model might be more towards, you know, the Screen Actors Guild or something along those lines where, you know, there's a big disparity between salaries, but and they're all individual actors, but they still manage to get, you know, medical care and those type of things worked into their contracts for everyone. And I think that's extremely important for mixed martial artists, because there's a lot of injuries that happen outside of the fights. I mean, the UFC is very good for taking care of their fighters when they're injured
During a fight.
But, you know, I mean, anyone who trains knows the amount of injuries that can happen when you're training up to a fight. And we've seen how many fights have to be reworked because of injury. I think that's the big issue. I think a fighters union needs to be made for injuries, specifically for that, not only a pension, but specifically for injuries.
Anything.
Yeah. Just so these guys can have some sort of security, because you don't want fighters fighting injured just to pay their mortgage or to take care of their family, because they can get more injuries, you know, damage their, you know, maybe end their career to the point, like if you blow your knee out, your career could be over. It might hinder your ability to get a job down the line somewhere else. I mean, there has to be some kind of safety net for these guys. And I'm a big proponent for a union for the fighters. So I think something has to be worked out just for the base, just so some kind of foundation to take care of these guys.
Fair enough. Now let's move forward. And I pretty much agree with, you know, the majority of what you said. I think it's very well said. But let's move forward and look at the sport, because we had a big conversation as we were coming up to the station here about what the NBA is to basketball, what MLB is to Major League or to baseball in general, what the NHL is to hockey, what the NFL is to football. I read a really good article on MMA Weekly talking about this, and you take a look at, as you go to your favorite sports websites, i.e. the Fan 590 or Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, what you see, you don't click hockey, you don't click basketball, you don't click baseball, you click NHL, you click NBA, you click NFL, MLB. Is the time coming now where, you know, these sites are going to stop labeling MMA and just calling it UFC?
Well, there was, for a time, there was some sites doing that.
Yeah, there was one of them.
And, you know what, and I think they will. I mean, if you do a Google search and you look at Google Trends, UFC gets, I think, five times, maybe even more, the amount of inquiries or searches that MMA does. And, you know, just from talking to people about MMA, they don't know what I'm talking about.
Yes. Do you do the MMA?
Yeah, the average person doesn't know what MMA is or stands for. But the time you mention UFC, they know exactly what you mean. And I know in the past Dana White has talked about NASCAR and the NFL. I mean, that's the kind of brand that he wants. When you talk about stock car racing, you talk about NASCAR. You don't mention anything else.
Yeah.
And I think that's what he's working towards. And I think it's good for the sport as long as the fighters are taken care of. I mean, as long as they get some kind of cohesive agreement on a union, yep. I think that's going to be the future major thing to happen. And once that happens, I think everything is going to be really, really bright for the future.
And the future is bright when you look at the potential matchups that we're going to have, because now what's happening is if the UFC has all these fighters under contract, then we will see the fights that Dana White and the fans and Lorenzo Fertitta and Joe Silva and the hardcore base and the mainstream base that they all want to see. So we are going to see potentially the Alistair Overeems, if he doesn't go to K1, which that's another story altogether. There may not be any more K1, so Alistair might have no choice but to only compete in MMA, and for him to take on the Brock Lesnar's, the Cain Velasquez's, the Junior DeSantos, you know, that put an end to that debate of Nick Diaz versus George St. Pierre, where the hardcore Nick Diaz fans complain about, you know, George St. Pierre is not as good as we all say he is. Diaz is much better. And of course, you know, we said Gilbert Melendez early on in the show. That's a fight that we want to see, because there's a guy right there that belongs in the top upper echelon to compete against the Frankie Edgars, the BJ Penns, if BJ goes back to 155, or the Gray Maynards. I'm very stoked about those types of fights. But let me put this to you. The one thing I never talked about on this week's episode of MMA Connected that I want to talk about with you, what about the Eddie Alvarez's, fighters of that nature, the Hatsue Oki, because we don't know if he's where he's signing just yet, fighters of that nature that they are worthy of being in the big show, but they are locked in with organizations like Bellator, or right now Hatsue Oki down in Japan with WVR Sengoku, if they're pretty much done anyways. The Shinya Aokis, the Tatsuya Kawajiris. I mean, technically, Aoki and Kawajiri technically are with the UFC, but nothing is concrete just yet. So when you think of fighters like Eddie Alvarez, what do they do now?
Well, I will say about the Japanese fighters, I would expect all of them to be in the UFC fairly soon, within a year in my mind. I mean, it depends on how fast the UFC is looking to expand into Asia. I mean, it seems like they want to immediately do it, but expect most, if not all, the Japanese fighters to end up in the UFC, because they need those names around that area. They need the guys who have been fighting in front of those fans. And they also need the guys that the culture can relate to. So I'd expect, I mean, you look at Sengoku, they've been releasing fighters whenever the fighter's been asking for their releases. So I think they will end up in the UFC. The big unfortunate name on all of this is Eddie Alvarez. I mean, to me, he's top three. I mean, he is a guy who can step in there with Gray Maynard, Eddie, Edgar, or even Melendez any day of the week and, you know, and trade with them. I mean, even possibly win. So he's the big name that is unfortunate in all this. I mean, I'm hoping... Like, I probably would have liked to see the UFC buy Bellator before Strikeforce.
I was just going to say that. Does this not open up the opportunity for Bellator, and we know Mark Pavlich will say the MFC, but these types of organizations now to become that number two to eventually, A, attempt to try and compete with the UFC and or be on the UFC's radar where they're just simply going to buy them?
I think the best thing for this is very good for Bellator. Not because... they should compete with the UFC. I don't think they should, and I don't think they're going to. But because it automatically makes them number two. Whenever you're put up against an opponent that is way bigger than you are, your stature increases. I mean, if you look at Dan Hardy about to fight GSP, before Dan Hardy fought GSP, he was not even in the mention of the top 10 pretty much on any list.
Yep.
He gets a title shot, immediately top 10. Everyone's immediately talking about him being a contender, telling him how dangerous he is. His stock rose for pretty much doing nothing before the fight. I mean, he did have his wins, but I mean, in the period between his last win and the GSP fight, his stock rose incredibly. And I think the same thing will happen with Bellator. I mean, they're going to be mentioned as the number two organization across the board, and their stock is going to rise for them basically doing nothing. But the reason I said that I probably would have rather the UFC bought a Bellator is I think their model fits with what the UFC wants more, or what I would see as a more stable future, is they have a weekly television show that is a tournament that is basically built to promote and make stars.
Still hate their graphics for this year's. Oh, drive me nuts. But,
so every single week you would have opportunities to promote your pay-per-views, and you'd also be promoting new fighters that would eventually make their way to the upper organization. And that,
but this is what the UFC is planning on doing anyways, weekly shows, no ifs, ands, or buts. But in order to do weekly shows, you need more fighters, and now they've acquired more fighters. So don't be surprised if, like we talked about the WWE model, where you do see weekly shows on whatever day of the week, and they lead up to pay-per-view events.
And essentially, the Ultimate Fighter is a tournament, and it is what Bellator is doing. But the thing I like about Bellator is those fights, for one thing, are three rounds, and they count against their professional records, and they're live. Whereas the Ultimate Fighter happens months in advance, and you have to wait, and there's a lot of drama around it. I mean, I think just for the pure sport of it, I think a model like Bellator would work better to promote fighters into the UFC. I'm hoping that that's what they want to do with Strikeforce down the line, maybe Strikeforce Challengers, whatever they want to call it. But
merging.
That is the kind of model I'd like to see for a weekly television program leading into the UFC. It's probably why I'm such a big fan of Bellator, but...
Well, the whole model for a weekly television show is pretty simple. The fights have to mean something. If they don't mean anything, then they're just fights.
Yeah, and for sure. And Bellator has them working towards a potential title shot. So, you know, I'd expect all those fighters to end up in the UFC, like we said before, except Eddie Alvarez. I think you're going to have to wait at least until his contract is up. But
he's got the champions clause for sure in that contract.
And I'm hoping so much for him to eventually make it into the UFC. I really want to see those fights.
Yeah, the problem with Eddie Alvarez is he's going to be competing now against fighters that people are not going to be considering in the top 10. And he's a top 10 guy. And he might go through that Fedor syndrome where he's only fighting guys that, just for the sake of fighting, that really don't mean or don't have anything to offer for his, you know, quote-unquote legacy.
And you know, another thing that's unfortunate is guys like Toby Yamada aren't going to be given the credit that they deserve for their wins in Bellator, because people are going to see Bellator as a lesser organization. But, you know, guys like Eddie Alvarez and Toby Yamada, these guys are actually legit lightweights, and I think they need to be given a little bit more respect.
Toby Yamada's ground game is ridiculous. I don't want to ever be caught in that guy's armor. Yeah.
And his stand-up is ridiculous, too. I mean, remember he was in that S1 tournament a while ago.
Yes, he was. All right, we will look back at Bellator's last event, as well as look ahead to their next one, and of course, UFC 128, our breakdown of this exceptional fight card coming up next. You're listening to The Showdown.
This is The Showdown. Showdown with Showdown Joe on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Welcome back to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. Once again, my co-host in studio, Tyler Mason. We discussed at length the UFC's acquisition of Strikeforce, but now let's move forward and take a look at what's happening in the world of mixed martial arts when it actually comes to fights. We'll touch on Bellator 36 very quickly, then touch on Bellator 37 even quicker, and then UFC 128. We will break down the fight card, as many of those fights as we possibly can, and get you set for an exceptional pay-per-view going down to Prudential Center this Saturday in Newark, New Jersey. All right, first things first, Bellator 36, an exceptional card to say the least. It was the lightweight, it was the debut of the lightweight tournament, and what we saw were some exceptional fights, all finishes. We'll go through it real quick. Michael Chandler defeated Marcin Held. You're a big fan of Held because of his slick jiu-jitsu. Kerry Vanier losing to Lloyd Woodward, and I was a huge fan after watching Woodward fight. That guy is amazing. He's slick. Toby Amata, shockingly enough, defeats Josh Shockley, shockingly enough, via armbar, and of course the main event was exceptional. Patrycki Freyde takes out another pit bull, takes out Rob McCullough. What stood out for you real quick in Bellator 36?
Well, the Patrycki fight stood out for me. I mean, that first round he looked amazing, and it looked like he was losing until he basically folded Razor Rob right in half in that third round. So that was pretty awesome. And like you said, I'm now a fan of Marcin Held. I mean, I think he's going to be a future contender. I mean, he's very young and he looked good. He did lose, but I think you should see him in the future in that division.
Who wins the tournament based on the four that are going through right now?
I'm going to go with either Toby Amata or Patrycki Freyde.
I like those picks. And of course, I think the dark horse is going to be Lloyd Woodard. Nothing away from Chandler.
I think the dark horse is Chandler. I mean, he looked really solid, and I mean, that knee bar was on tight, and he didn't want to give in, so I think he's the dark horse for me.
Fair enough. All right, Bellator 37 is going down this Saturday as well at the Lucky Star Casino in Concho, Oklahoma. This is the debut of the featherweight quarterfinals. Georgie Karkanian taking on the other Patricio Freyde. Wilson Heist taking on Zach George. Kenny Foster taking on Eric Larkin. And Daniel Strauss taking on Argentinian featherweight Nazareno Malagueri. Now, eight guys, four fights, only four guys can advance. I'll give you the names one more time. You tell me who's going to win and how. Daniel Strauss, Nazareno Malagueri.
I'm going to go with Daniel Strauss on this.
Wrestling?
I assume, yeah.
I'm saying decision here.
Yeah, you know what? There's a lot of finishes in Bellator. I'm going to go with a finish. I think he's going to ground and pound them.
All right, Kenny Foster, Eric Larkin. I'm going to go with Larkin.
I'm going to go with Larkin as well.
Bye.
That one will probably be a decision.
I'll go with a submission. Armbar? No, I'll just say submission. Like, no way I can pick. All right, Wilson Heist taking on Zach George. I think here's a TKO victory for Wilson Heist.
I will say Wilson Heist by submission in this one.
Okay.
He's one of the guys I'm familiar with pretty extensively from all his grappling.
And this is definitely has to be fight of the night, I think. Georgie Karkanian taking on Patrycio Freyde. Who wins that and why?
Very tough fight, but I'm going to go with Patrycio Freyde. I mean, he looked amazing in the last tournament. I mean, in all intents and purposes, he could have won that last tournament, so I think he's the favorite going forward.
I will also go with Patrycio Freyde. All right, let's look ahead to UFC 128 going down this Saturday night. Let's bang through this card, not as quickly as we can, but let's get right through it pretty quick. Nick Catone obviously has a replacement. He was supposed to fight Dan Miller. Dan Miller now steps up and takes on Nate Marquardt because Marquardt's original opponent, Yoshihiro Akiyama, obviously with the whole Japanese devastation, the tsunamis and the earthquakes, wasn't able to make it over. So Dan Miller will be on the main card. We'll talk about that momentarily, but for now, Nick Catone takes on Konstantinos Filipov. I'm going with Nick Catone by decision.
I'm going to go with Nick Catone as well. I don't really like when guys come in on short notice, but it is interesting that the UFC rarely does catch weights, but when they do, you more or less see them around 195.
Yes.
So looking going forward, that's kind of interesting.
All right. Rafael Asuncal taking on Eric Coe. I will go with Asuncal I don't know. Wait a second. I will go with Eric Coe by decision.
This is one of probably the most underrated fights on this entire card. Great, great fight. We'll be lucky if we get to see it. I'm going to go with Eric Coe, but Asuncal could easily win this. So, great fight.
Pick one.
I'm going to go with Eric Coe.
Eric Coe. Okay, sorry. Joseph Jiu-Jitsu Benavidez taking on Ian Loveland. This is a great fight, but I think for some odd reason, just the way Benavidez fights, the guy is an absolute monster. I will go with Benavidez.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Benavidez. The guy is a tiny firecracker, and I'm going to go with Benavidez all day long.
All right, Kurt Pellegrino. These next two bouts will be shown on Facebook. All you got to do is click like on Facebook, and you're good to go. The first one is Kurt Pellegrino taking on Gleison Tibau, and then Ricardo Almeida taking on Mike Pyle. Let's go with Kurt Pellegrino versus Gleison Tibau first. I will go with Batman Kurt Pellegrino by submission.
These are two great fights on a stacked card. I mean, we're very privileged to see these for free on Facebook. I'm going to say Gleison Tibau just because I think he's too big.
And because you don't want to pick anything I pick, right?
Well, I'm just super impressed with Gleison Tibau. I mean, his fight with Jim Miller, I think, proved that they were both top contenders.
You know what? That's a very good point. But I'm not going to change my pick. I'll go with the Batman.
Pellegrino has a lot to lose, so he is fighting desperate. He said himself this could decide the rest of his career. So
yeah, for sure.
But I'm still going Tibau.
Ricardo Almeida taking on Mike Pyle. Tell me who's going to win.
Well, Mike Pyle kind of had his coming out party against John Hathaway. I mean, everyone thought he was going to lose, and he kind of dominated. This is a very interesting fight. I think it's going to determine where both these guys go. If Almeida loses this one, he might call it quits, in my opinion. I'm going to go with Pyle. I think he's very, very underrated in this division.
I will also go with Mike Pyle. I was hoping you would pick Almeida so we can go against each other, but definitely Mike Quicksand Pyle is who I'm picking, and probably by decision here.
I bet we agree on the next one, too.
Yes. The man that we've been talking about for a very long time, we will call him the Johnny Bones Jones of the lightweight division. Brazil's Edson Barboza taking on Anthony Njuquani. Edson Barboza, in my opinion, is prime for a run. Even though it's just his second fight in the UFC, he is prime for a run. I don't think Njuquani does have an idea what's about to happen to his legs, but once those kicks start landing, I think Barboza's going to stop this kid.
Yeah, and Njuquani doesn't have the ground game to take this to the ground, and he doesn't have anywhere near the ground game to finish Barboza on the ground. So I think Barboza is going to take this standing. And what's also important is I think Barboza is quite a bit bigger than Njuquani. So I think all around, it's Edson Barboza.
All right, Luis Kane. These fights, the Edson Barboza, Anthony Njuquani fight, and this next fight, Luis Kane versus Elliot Marshall, you can catch them on Rogers Sportsnet, 9 p.m. Eastern. You definitely want to tune in for Edson Barboza, ladies and gentlemen. If you get a chance to get out to your television Saturday at 9 p.m., make sure you watch this because I firmly believe this is the kid that's going to make a run in the lightweight division. Now, the other fight you're going to see, which will probably be the second one, Luis Kane taking on Elliot Marshall. I'm going to go with Luis Kane in this fight.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Luis Kane as well. I mean, he's kind of been derailed with his loss against Ciryl Diabate and also Nogueira. But I think he's going to come back in this fight. I mean, he had some stellar wins before that. I think this is kind of his comeback trail.
Same thing with Elliot Marshall. It's his comeback trail as well. Hopefully he learned his lessons from competing with the UFC before and competing outside of the organization because, I mean, Elliot Marshall's jiu-jitsu is very slick. He just doesn't prove it. And he's got to prove it in this fight here. Take Luis Kane down to the ground and submit him. But I'll still go with Luis Kane. Let's move forward to the main card. Apparently the first bout of the evening will feature Mirko Krokop-Filipovic taking on the hybrid Brendan Schaub. Will this be the very last time that we see Mirko Krokop inside the octagon? Or is Brendan Schaub in for a rude awakening with a left high kick?
I think this is the last time we'll see Krokop in the octagon as a fighter. Maybe he'll be in someone's corner someday. I don't know. But I don't think he
has... Look at you getting all technical.
I don't think he has the fighting spirit left in him. And he's been talking about retirement for his last three fights. And I really think that's why they gave it to Schwab. I think they want him to have a big name on his record. So, I mean, someone who kind of doesn't have the fire, I think...
Does Schwab finish him?
Yes, I think so. Krokop's cardio has been pretty terrible in his last two fights.
I'll go with Schwab, TKO round three.
I'll say round two.
Nate Marquardt taking on Dan Miller, a great fight. I just think Nate Marquardt has too many tools, and this potentially is his final run up the middleweight rankings because he cannot afford to lose anymore. He was that close to getting a second title shot. He lost it miserably. Who was it against Akiyama? I believe it was Akiyama.
We were talking about him recently, Yushin Okami.
Yushin Okami, my bad. Okami just completely dominated him. I don't even know why I said Akiyama because you and I were talking about Akiyama before and how unimpressed I am with Akiyama's stint in the UFC. Regardless, Nate Marquardt taking on Dan Miller. I think Nate Marquardt will pull this off, but it's going to be a decision because Dan Miller is as tough as they come.
I think Nate Marquardt will pull this off. Like you said, he has more tools. I think he's just a higher level mixed martial artist right now. And Dan Miller's coming on short notice. I think you said Akiyama because he was supposed to be in place. But yeah, Mark Quart, I think he's going to win.
They say style makes fights, or styles make fights. And Kamal Chalaroos taking on Jim Miller, in my opinion, is a scary proposition. And I know I'm sitting across from the biggest Jim Miller fan north of the American border. I think this fight's going to be a headache for Jim Miller. I'll say he'll pull off two of the three rounds. He will win, but I think Kamal Chalaroos is going to give him all he can handle.
I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say this is going to be an easy fight for Jim Miller, because I think Chalaroos isn't going to use his wrestling at all. I mean, we're going to see two wrestlers. They're going to strike the entire time, but Miller has straighter punching. And, you know, Chalaroos is going to come in there, head forward, and throw hooks the whole time. And I think Miller's just going to pick him apart. So I'm going to go Jim Miller.
All right. And by the way, happy St. Paddy's Day to everybody. I don't know why we didn't mention it from the top of the show. Well, maybe because we're sober.
Well, that's true.
Okay. That's not to say we're not going to be sober after the show. No, I'm going home. I'm going home. Actually, I'm flat out lying. I won't be going home. If you don't know where I'm at right now, ladies and gentlemen, you're not a big fan of the show down here. Anyways, let's move forward to the co-main event. Uriah, the California Kid Faber, making his Octagon debut, taking on Eddie Wineland, an explosive striker. But I think Uriah Faber not only will use his speed to outclass Eddie Wineland, he will secure himself a spot opposite Dominic Cruz as a coach on season 14 of The Ultimate Fighter. What say you?
I think the problem with this fight is Uriah Faber won't get enough credit for winning. Because Eddie Wineland's a former champ and a very tough veteran. I think Uriah Faber is just too strong, especially at that weight class. And I think he'll win, but I don't think people are going to give him any credit for the win. So I think that's kind of an issue with the fight.
Does he finish off Eddie Wineland?
I think he does. I mean, he finished off guys like a Sun Tzu in their own game. I mean,
chokes,
and very, very tough fighters to finish. And even Mitsugaki, I mean, he's a tough guy to finish, and he did it. So I think he will finish him.
We have 2 minutes to break down the main event. Mauricio Shogun, who are defending his title for the first time against Johnny Bones Jones. And when I say the first time, it's mainly because when he defeated Lyoto Machida, he quickly had to undergo knee surgery. Once again, he's been out of action for about 10 months, which doesn't bode well for a guy who's facing off against John Jones, who last competed about 6 weeks ago, defeating Ryan Bader. Now, John Bones Jones has not defeated anyone the caliber of Mauricio Shogun Hua, but he has finished guys that were sort of, you know, up there in the rankings. Brandon Vera was kissing the top 10. Matsuchenko was top 20. Ryan Bader, I believe, was number 7 on my rankings. Number 7 pretty much all around the mixed martial arts world. And of course, he dominated Matt Hamill. Does John Bones Jones have his hand raised in victory to become the new UFC light heavyweight champion on Saturday night?
I think he does, and I think one thing we have to do is stop calling John Jones a prospect. He's now officially a contender. He's right there at the top. And I think the big thing is, like you mentioned, we've talked about it on previous shows, is the knee surgery. I mean, we're not probably not going to see the Shogun that we should see in there at 100%. I mean, the last time he came off knee surgery, we've mentioned, he looked terrible against Forrest Griffin. And even in his second fight in the UFC against Mark Coleman, his cardio was still terrible. So it really depends on how his cardio has been after this knee
surgery.
Jones
pushes him to the fourth and fifth round.
And we've never seen Jones challenged. We've never seen Jones tired. I mean, he has some of the longest limbs in the UFC, in like the history of the UFC. He's super fast. He's crisp. He has all the skills that you need to win the championship. And I think he seizes opportunity when he sees it. And I think his wins over Bader and Vera are the most telling, because I think they were the toughest competition, especially Vera. I don't think Vera gets the credit that he deserves, but I think Jones is going
to
take it.
If you want to know my prediction, you got to tune into this week's episode of MMA Connected, where I flipped a coin to determine who was going to win. You can catch it online at sportsnet.ca. Tyler, thank you very much for coming in today.
No problem.
You've been listening to The Showdown on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.